From KUER News in Salt Lake City, this is Radio West. I'm Doug Fabrizio. Joanne Slotnick says she'd never really been all that politically active before. I mean, she voted, kept up on the news, but not much else. After the election, though, she says she found herself posting more and more political ideas and opinions on her Facebook page. She didn't have a ton of friends on the page, but the reaction she got, she says, moved her forward. One thing led to another. She went to the recent town hall meeting with Congressman Jason Chaffetz, and now she says she's trying to figure out how to help organize some 3,500 people who also want to get involved. Today in the program, we're talking about what all of this means, how people are getting involved in politics, in some cases for the very first time, and what difference they think it will make. Join us after the news.
Take Radio West wherever you go with KUER's mobile app for Android and iPhone. Public radio is always a swipe away with KUER's mobile app, free and available for download right now in your mobile phone's app store.
This is Radio West. I'm Doug Fabrizio. Earlier this month, more than 1,000 people couldn't get into a town hall meeting with Utah Congressman Jason Chaffetz held at Brighton High School. 1,000 did get in, and it was a pretty raucous affair. The people who did get in confronted the congressman about immigration, about public land, about why he wasn't investigating the Trump administration for conflicts of interest. There were a lot of these kinds of gatherings all over the country this month. It's been described as a dam-bursting level of engagement, a hurricane-strength blast of disapproval. The congressman has described the town hall as bullying and an attempt at intimidation. He said it was a concerted effort to just cause chaos. Without offering any evidence, he said he believed some in the crowd had been paid to be there. It's a sentiment echoed yesterday by President Trump, who tweeted that the crowds at these town hall meetings were planned out by liberal activists. Now, I should point out that we have reached out to Congressman Chaffetz, not only to respond to his accusations about the gathering, but to join us for a broader conversation about his work in Congress and his role as chairman of the House Oversight and Government Reform Committee. The congressman's office told us this morning they could not join us today, but we haven't been told no yet about the other requests, so we'll let you know about that as we go along. Today in the program, though, we're going to be using that one town hall meeting as a way of discussing political activism here in Utah. There have been street protests, crowds showing up at congressional offices, lots of people who hadn't really been active before have been marching and sending emails. So we're hoping to hear from you today. How are you getting involved? How are you making yourself heard? What type of political engagement do you think is going to make a difference? Our email address, radiowest@kuer.org. Joining us first on the program is Joanne Slotnick, co-founder of Salt Lake Indivisible. It's a local branch of a national progressive grassroots political action group. Slotnick is a retired lawyer, was the executive director of the Utah Judicial Performance Evaluation Commission, is joining us here in the studio, and welcome to you. Thanks for being
with
us. Hadn't been that active before? Like, you hadn't really been to protests and things like that before?
No. Well, in the Vietnam era, that old.
Yeah.
But no, I just was a citizen who read the paper and voted.
So what was the thing that got you going? I mean, I suppose it was initially a response to the election?
Absolutely. It was absolutely. And this is really focused on the president. This is not a matter of Republicans versus Democrats. I feel, I have felt increasingly since the election, as an American, that I'm concerned about the direction in which our democracy is going.
You know, I've heard a lot of people talking about, and you see it on Facebook posts, and saying that instead of just whinging about it, they wanted to do something, that they were really going to engage. It seems like that's what's happening with you.
Absolutely. I mean, I started by just, I found that my Facebook posts were getting increasingly political because that was what was grabbing my attention. And I had done my share of talking with family and friends, that wasn't changing anything. And I noticed that I had, you know, maybe 20 Facebook followers who were really, who were just focused on the political issues.
Yeah.
And so I got together with one of them and we said, well, why don't we just throw up a Facebook page? And according to the Indivisible Guide, you know, you have 10 people, you can make a difference. And we thought, well, maybe we could get together and, you know, write some letters or go visit our members of Congress, and then it just mushroomed from there into something that neither of us had ever imagined.
What do you think people want? Like, are they thinking in practical terms of something they want, or is this at least initially, not to demean it in any way, but a really emotional kind of reaction?
I think the initial part is emotional, yeah. And it's wanting to have your voice heard, regardless of your political affiliation, wanting to have your voice heard as an American about your concerns about this president. I mean, Utah voted, what, 42% for the president? So he did not carry the state of Utah. He got the electoral votes, but he did not win a majority. And everything about what, you know, is stereotypically called Utah values is the polar opposite of what this man stands for. And I think people are increasingly concerned as they see his agenda moving forward, and more importantly, as they see our four representatives and two senators following in lockstep behind the president.
Here's what the president tweeted. It's a form of communication that he likes, as you know. He tweeted this. This was yesterday. The so-called angry crowds in home districts of some Republicans are actually, in numerous cases, planned out by liberal activists. And then that rejoinder, sad.
Right.
How do you respond to that? How much planning did you get from local groups? I know you're part of a national organization that does want to organize people's
right.
Opinions.
I mean, when you call it a national group, I think you really need to understand what that means.
Yeah. Okay.
So after the election, some people who had been in Congress at the time, the Tea Party, took over, sat down, I assume, around, you know, in someone's apartment somewhere, and they took lessons from the Tea Party, from what worked when the Tea Party took over, and they created a document called the Indivisible Guide, and they threw it up online as a Google Doc. That was their sort of the thing that they figured out they could do. Well, I received that Google Doc when it was forwarded to me by a friend whose daughter had seen it. He forwarded it to me and said, you might be interested in this. I think that happened thousands and thousands of times around the country until the Google Doc site just crashed. I read that document, and it said, you only need 10 people to make a difference. And I thought, well, I know 10 people. Maybe, you know, instead of just whining, maybe I should make a difference. And so I got together with this friend, and then it's become what it has today. But it's not, you know, it's not like there's someone directing our activities. The national indivisible people have now put out other tools, group leader guides, you know, things like that, tools you can use. But it's not like someone is coordinating this. These are all just popping up around the country on their own.
What is the one of the things that the congressman took note of and mentioned, that there was a lot of shouting him down and some attempts at intimidation, that people weren't giving him a chance to respond to questions. Now, are you getting guidance from these groups, these people, that that's a tactic, or that you should stay away from tactics like that, that there should be civility? I mean, what kind of guidance are you getting, how do you respond to that?
Civility is clearly something that we're aiming for. But what I think happened I have a theory of what happened at that town hall meeting. I think people, since the election, are increasingly distrusting the president. And I think they're doing that because of his impulsivity, you know, his denigrating of all kinds of people, his overall way of being in the world. If you saw his last press conference, I mean, he couldn't get from point A to point B in any kind of a line. So I think people are increasingly mistrusting him. And when you mistrust someone who's in a really powerful position, that makes you fearful that you're going to lose your rights. And I think things like his attack on freedom of the press, his this brand new immigration dragnet, that makes people fearful. And I think what happened at that town hall meeting, what you saw when Representative Chaffetz, first of all, didn't provide any microphone for the people who were trying to speak in a hall that held 1,000 people. And then when the very first question was asked, he didn't answer it. I think all that distrust and fear just exploded as frustration and as anger. It was a very intense meeting. It was not violent, but it was very intense emotionally. And so I think that was just like a valve letting all that emotion out. And I what we want our representatives to understand is that that wasn't obviously we're not paid out-of-town protesters. We all live here and are invested here. But we want them to hear us. We want them to understand that the reality on the ground has changed since the election.
Let's take a few phone calls, and we'll start with Laurie, who's calling from Magna. Laurie, welcome.
Hello.
Hi.
So I thought I would just tell you that even though I've been involved in politics in the past, got a degree in political science, Middle Eastern studies, things that from the past, this election really energized me in a new way. I was a Bernie supporter, but then when he, conceded, then I was, okay, let's get behind Hillary because we have to stop what's happening here with the Trump administration because of exactly everything that your guest just talked about. So I've become extremely active. I'm part of Salt Lake Indivisible, part of Utah Indivisible. I get a dailyaction.org text to my phone every day so that I can make a phone call every day, Monday through Friday, to an elected representative about my vote. I have this accountable app on my phone. I put my voice in as to what ways Congress ought to vote. I don't know if it's helping, but I have to do something. Otherwise, I'm going to go crazy. So there's my 2 cents.
All right, Lori, glad you called. Thanks very much. Really appreciate that.
Can I just say that the website she mentioned, dailyaction.org, is a great place to start. That's really how I started. They make it very easy. You just put in your phone number, and every Monday through Friday, you get one action item. It provides you all the information you need to make an effective phone call. There's another site called numeral 5calls.org, which is a similar thing, except that you get to choose what issues you're interested in, and then they direct you from there. But they're very easy to use.
Is this mostly liberals? You're going to get that response, of course, from the congressman. He's suggesting that. Obviously, the president is suggesting. Whether it's organized or not, are you all of one mind?
No, absolutely not. Indivisible is nonpartisan, and I would say fiercely nonpartisan. You don't have to be liberal to be offended by the direction in which the president is driving the country. You need to be an American. And to me, to speak up when you see your country going in a direction as wrong as this is being patriotic. Honestly, if we would just pull this thing off the brink and we had a Republican president who was within the bounds of our political system, I'd say fine. I can work with that.
Let's go back to the phones. Let's see. Felicia is with us in Sandy. Felicia, do I have you there?
Yes.
Yes, welcome.
Hi. Love the prior caller's comments. Indivisible Utah. I also joined. My question / comment was, it feels like we're taking kind of a trickle-up approach. And do you think that our local representatives are going to take that message even higher? Or are we going to get no mics? That's my question.
Okay. Wait, explain it. What do you mean? No, explain what you mean.
Yeah,
are they going
like,
to listen? Is that essentially what you're saying?
Exactly. Okay. I feel like President Chaffetz, oh my gosh, sorry about that. Representative Chaffetz might be demonstrating, and there have been others I saw in the news last night in Ohio, various places, where it feels like they're not listening. And maybe the tactic is, let's not listen. You're liberals, you're just complaining kind of attitude. Do you feel like the trickle-up approach is going to work?
It's a good question. And Congressman Chaffetz, as have others, have pointed out that, at least certainly in his case, he won his race. Mm-hmm. In his district by a significant margin, that there were other voices out there that didn't happen to show up at Brighton High School. So will he take to heart a bunch of from some perspective, a bunch of complaining liberals.
I think that's a mischaracterization. And an example of that is on President's Day in Provo, there was an event, and I did not attend it because the person who planned it specifically asked it to be limited to people in Chaffetz's district, and I thought that was something that, you know, I ought to respect. But I haven't read any news reports, but the way she characterized it on Facebook was that she was a conservative living in Provo, and she wanted to do a patriotic sing-along in Provo, along with respectful signs expressing disapproval for some of Chaffetz's actions. And, you know, that's a perfect example. You know, you've got to
But was that a contrast to what happened at Brighton High School? Was one more extreme, more, as you say, explosive in terms of its rhetoric and its emotion?
Yes.
And this was what you think in some ways people who had kind of calmed down at that point?
Mm-hmm. Yes. And I think as things go on, you're going to see more respectful exchanges. Yesterday, Salt Lake Indivisible does something called Resist Trump Tuesdays, which is a suggestion from the national group that every Tuesday for the first 100 days, people gather outside the federal building and try to speak to our senators or their representatives. And we went down yesterday, and about half a dozen people spent a full hour talking to staffers from Senator Lee and Senator Hatch's office. That's in contrast to previous weeks when people had gone in for maybe 10 minutes or 15 minutes. So I think they're beginning to understand that they need to listen. We are their constituents. And if they want our vote, they're going to have to listen to us and be more responsive.
Let's go back to the phones. Andrew is with us in West Valley. Andrew, welcome.
Hi, how are you doing?
Fine, thanks.
Okay, so one thing that I think Chaffetz failed to realize is that this northern end of his district, first of all, the plurality of Salt Lake County voted for Hillary Clinton. Second of all, there was a significant number, I believe it was 19 or 20%, that voted for McMullen. Mm-hmm. So Trump didn't even poll 40%. I think he was somewhere in the 30% range. So he's really unpopular up here relative to the rest of his district. And those are the constituents that live the closest to Brighton High School.
Right.
And so I think that had a lot to do with the dynamics of his meeting.
Good. Glad you pointed that out, Andrew. Thanks.
And I think also there were people at the Chaffetz Town Hall who are not from his district. And my feeling is because of his position as the chair of the House Oversight Committee and the issues around the president's conflicts of interest and the Russian involvement were all invested in him.
Another call from Ken in Sugar House. Ken, welcome.
Hi. I just want to say I've been very encouraged by the activism I've seen since the election. I've worked with the Indivisible people a lot. I'm really impressed with what they've been doing. But I also want to encourage people to not forget about their local traditional political parties. I took this last year was the first time I've been involved with an actual race. And the people that have been involved, especially in the local level, have taught me a great deal. You don't necessarily need to register to make an impact, but they say all politics is local.
Yeah.
You can go be a delegate in your district. You can be a legislative chair. And when we're going to challenge Chaffetz, you can have an influence if you join your local party and work from the ground up.
Ken, thanks very much. It's kind of a good segue, too. Let me ask you, Joanne, a final question. Do you think on some level there was a kind of complacency before among some people? Yes, maybe they voted, although it seems like significant numbers did not. But that in some ways these kinds of meetings, this kind of activism, doing an action a day or whatever it might be, is a kind of an act of redeeming some people, redeeming themselves for ambivalence or at least a lack of action in the past.
Right. I think, you know, as is true in many aspects of life, sometimes you don't know what you have until you start to lose it. And, you know, that's what I think is happening here. I think we're seeing an assault on our democracy, and we're seeing orders coming out of Washington that are just so contrary to what we believe is the country we love, the values underlying our country. And that does open your eyes and make you stand up and act.
Here's an email we got from Allison, who's in Monticello. She said, since the inauguration, my husband and I have become politically active for the first time in our lives. We're both 38. We found the 10 actions in the first 100 days actions and decided to start it in our own small town there in San Juan County. We held the first meeting at our house with just 7 friends, wrote more than 25 postcards to our election officials. Not all complaints, by the way. She says, I'm trying to make a point of writing at least one thank you postcard at each meeting. Allison, thanks for that. Stephen writes, where it really matters is voting, and that's what the GOP counts on. We don't vote. We stay home. They vote when we start marching again, and then they vote when we start marching again. It's pathetic. Maybe somebody should start a march to vote this time. This from Lacey, who sent this via Twitter. I called my reps more in the first week of Trump's administration than I ever have called any reps. Jess also wrote on Twitter, I am in the Utah 3rd Congressional District. I attended the Chaffetz Town Hall. First-timer, happy to hold my red-green cards. Also, I now have my senators and representatives programmed into my contacts. Joanne Slotnick, co-founder of Salt Lake Indivisible. Thank you very much for being
Thank
with
you
us.
So much.
We'll take a break and come back in a moment. You're listening to Radio West on KUER. This is Radio West. I'm Doug Fabrizio. Today in the program, we are talking about, well, we're sort of talking about that town hall meeting with Congressman Jason Chaffetz. Earlier this month, thousands of people showed up for a meeting at Brighton High School, and they packed the place. In fact, more people were left out than got in. And today in the program, we're using that moment, that kind of explosion of emotion and activism, as a way of discussing activism in general in the age of Donald Trump. There have been street protests, as we've pointed out. There have been lots of people active in a way they hadn't been before. And joining us now on the program is Luke Garrett. He's an associate professor of political science at the University of Utah. He teaches a course on neighborhood democracy, also a former Salt Lake City councilman. You may recognize the name for that as well. And Luke Garrett, welcome to you. Thanks for being with us.
Hi, Doug.
And Jessica Preece is joining us, an assistant professor of political science at Brigham Young University. Her research looks at candidate recruitment and selection, especially women. She's joining us from the studios of KBYU in Provo. And Professor Preece, welcome to you. Thanks for being with us.
Glad to be here.
I guess I want to begin with some general reactions to what did you think, Luke Garrett? It was described by Joanne Slotnick as a kind of explosion of emotion. Did you characterize it that way?
I would. I mean, it's pretty obvious that people are engaged and many of them are upset. And the way I make sense of it is civility is an excellent thing in society. We need social graces. Every society needs them. But they tend to break down when the communication isn't two-sided. Civility, depending on the context, is a tool of the powerful. You know, it's a tool of the people who have the microphone already. And I thought it was a precious piece of fact that
that there wasn't a microphone for the audience?
Exactly.
Yeah. Jessica Preece, what did you think?
Yeah, I tend to agree. I think there was a lot of emotion. I have been trying to go to as many of these as I can because it's just fascinating from a political science perspective to see what's going on. But so I was outside the town hall, and there was definitely a great deal of emotion. People in political science, we talk about expressive politics. Mm-hmm. And so I think there was a lot of interest in expressing their frustration and trying to, you know, trying to be heard, have their emotions be heard.
Is this unique for Utah? Is this typical for a Utah culture that tends to be, if you take into account the sort of Mormon dynamic, a little bit more reserved, certainly more conservative and more kind of polite? Jessica Preece?
I think contentious politics is something that is a little bit less comfortable for many people in Utah, a little bit less familiar. But, you know, we've seen it before with the Tea Party movement. That was a contentious politics movement. I think it's just been a little while. And, you know, most people just prefer to be able to go about their day and not worry too much about politics and show up and do their civic duty and vote. I think that's most people's preferred method of operating in a republic, and so this is a little bit different from that typical baseline.
What do you think?
I think what Professor Priest said was right on. The fact that the Chaffetz meeting was in Salt Lake County, I think, says a lot. These were his constituents from Salt Lake County, and we know that President Trump didn't win Salt Lake County in the election. So, we don't have a congressional district for the Democratic minority here. You know, the last time congressional districts were drawn in 2010, we got the pie slice, and so Salt Lake County Democratic voters don't have a representative in Congress, and they let their frustrations be known the other night.
I wonder what your critique might be, both of you, of Congressman Chaffetz's reaction or his approach that night, to the degree that you were able to see it. I think, Jessica Priest, you didn't actually get in to Brighton High, but surely you've heard a bit about how he's reacted. Again, said a lot of the tactics were intimidation and bullying and chaos. Some have said inside the event that he was egging on the crowd, teasing them in some way, wasn't sincerely trying to understand what was going on. What's your critique of the way he has responded?
Well, I mean, when you're an elected representative, you're a public servant, and part of what you should expect is for people to be upset with you. And I think Representative Chaffetz has always won his races by large margins. He's, you know, rarely had challengers that have, and none that have presented any real difficulty. And so I think in some ways it might be a little bit of a new experience for him to have constituents that are very upset with him. And that requires a different kind of engagement. It requires you to take it. You know, I mean, that's your job, is to listen to what people have to say and be a sounding board, even when that, you know, even when those sounds are yelling. And so I think that's part of the problem, is that his sort of cavalier response and dismissive response, I think, just fed the fire. I think it would have been better for him to just said, you know, I hear you, and I you know, we might not agree on all of these things. Instead, there was, you know, it was, he kind of raised the stakes.
Here's a comment from Shelley, who writes from Tooele. After the election, I heard someone suggest people could make a stand for unity and compassion by doing service in their own community. So I've taken on that advice by volunteering with the Salvation Army Sub for Santa program, donating snacks and supplies to teachers at a local high school, buying stuffed animals that were on sale after Valentine's Day for the Children's Justice Center. I don't expect I can make a big difference, she writes, but if lots of people choose to make a small difference, I hope it will all add up. Look, Garrett, you getting that sense is not just doing some kind of political protest, but getting engaged in the community. Is that a reaction you're seeing?
I can't say I've been seeing it in large scales, but that's just because my view of reality is just mine, right? I wouldn't be surprised if that were a reaction, especially in the longer term. Republicans are in control of White House and Congress, and we're going to get the Paul Ryan budget in some form. And people are going to need to help in their communities more, because the government is going to have way fewer resources than they've had. We know that the local and state governments are very dependent on federal subsidies for social programs. And, the Ryan budget is all about cutting back. And those are going to be deep cuts, and they're going to affect society in deep ways. So I really hope that people do react in a way that's democratic, even if it's outside traditional electoral forms. You know, taking care of their community, kind of the cultural side of democracy, democracy that's not part of the state, not part of elections, is super important. And this country, I just was going to call it America, you know, America with this great aura around it, has a great history of that, of being a democratic society where what we call horizontal relations are strong. And that can have nothing to do with electoral politics. People taking care of their community in a very localized sense is very important for this country.
Here's a comment from Veronica, who writes from Teasdale, Utah. I've been politically active to one degree or another my entire adult life in New Mexico, Colorado, here in Utah. While political activism can be challenging in any state, I must say Utah is in a class all of its own. Our elected representatives at every level seem to be almost entirely unaware of any constituents save those in a particular economic or social or philosophical group. Therefore, I am more active here in Wayne County than I ever was in other states. Let's go to the phones. Judy is with us in Sandy. Judy, welcome.
Hi, how are you?
Fine, thanks.
Okay, I have been participating in marches. I flew to D.C., to participate in the Women's March, and I have volunteered and increased donations to things like NPR because I'm very worried about the free press, and I have been making lots and lots of calls of my frustration, and I think that this is what boiled over in the town hall with Representative Chavis, was that several times the voicemail box is full or I don't get an answer. So, but the last, probably the thing that really bothered me the most, made me feel like my voice just didn't count, was when they started classifying me as a paid protester. It diminishes my efforts and my voice. It's like I don't count. And I think that that's when Representative Chavis did not seem to respond to the questions at the town hall in a positive way, you know, like he's really listening. It made people... It just frustrated people.
I'm glad you called. Thanks a lot.
You're quite welcome. Thanks.
Jessica Priest, I wanted to ask you, it seems like, to that point that she was making, it seems pretty organic. I mean, I know you have these online toolkits. There are these seminars. MoveOn.org is mobilizing members to come to some of these. Indivisible is, you know, providing guidelines and seminars and those kinds of things. But a lot of this seems pretty, like, not organized in a conventional way. It seems a little bit more organic. Do you think that's right?
Yeah, I think so the first thing to keep in mind is that whenever you're going to pursue what we call collective action, right, groups getting together to do things for the greater good, there always has to be organization, right? People don't just sort of spontaneously show up in a place. And so it shouldn't be a surprise that there are organizing elements here. What I have seen, though, is that these are like organic organizations, right? These are Facebook groups that somebody put together and started inviting some friends, and then they invited their friends. And, you know, so I think it's happening pretty organically. And yeah, there are some national organizations and some sort of loosely affiliated national kind of networks. But I think a lot of it really is happening pretty close to the grassroots level.
What do you think? One of the things you've said, Luke Garrett, I know you talked to our producers earlier yesterday, I think it was, you said these groups aren't really party extremists. There are a lot of moderates maybe in these groups as well.
Yeah, I see the kind of spontaneous nature of this being an extension of what voters usually do. It seems to me, and I have no measurement of this, it's just an impression that people who are showing up in person to protests and to town meetings are not people who have been organized in any technical sense. They haven't been reached out to, and their attitudes haven't been changed about politics. They are simply drawn into the system a little bit more than they have in the past. They know where they stand politically. They have voted, and they feel like their vote was not very effective. And if I could comment a little bit on people's frustration, where I think it's coming from. I'm a political theorist, and so I think in terms of philosophy and the big abstract ideas and the foundational ideas. And representative democracy doesn't seem to be working quite well when we have representatives that don't feel accountable. And I think Representative Chaffetz can kind of blow off the reaction because it's not going to hurt him at all. protests in the street aren't going to hurt the president either. We're not the people who are out in the street aren't going to touch people who are illegally in power until election time. And the great hope of representative democracy is electoral accountability, that if you don't like them, you can vote the bums out. Well, in non-competitive congressional districts, yeah, there's no accountability. All the action happens at the party level, who gets nominated for the dominant party. And without accountability, and with fewer and fewer districts nationwide that are competitive with the massive advantage that incumbents have because of the power of money, people don't feel like their vote counts very much. And that is a systematic problem we have.
We're seeing a bit of that, actually, in terms of the response. Jeanette writes, I'm not sure where she's from, but she writes, I'm so tired of Republicans saying their constituents want these conservative policies because they were elected, making it a mandate. There, she mentions gerrymandering, that there's no other choice but to protest because your voice isn't heard if you have another political idea. This is also expressed by someone here, don't have a name, but they say Democrats and liberals and progressives are definitely not a majority in Utah, but they are a significant minority and yet have almost zero representation in any form of government. So I think you're seeing that kind of frustration.
Yeah, and it's nationwide. It's a real problem we have.
Jessica Priest, I don't want to leave you out, but since I can't see you, I don't know if you want to jump in, so just do anytime.
Okay. I want to say amen to the question of electoral accountability. I think that is really the key, and there's lots of research on social movements that suggests that the point of social movements is not actually to change hearts and minds. It's to change incentives for the people in power, to require the people in power to pay attention to a particular issue or to motivate them to be concerned about whether this is going to have an electoral effect on them. It's to embolden challengers who might be willing to take on people who are currently sitting in office. So I think the real key is, does this get translated into party electoral politics? And in the state of Utah, in most districts, what that means is Republican Party politics. And that's one, you know, I know Indivisible is trying to model based on Tea Party tactics. And I think that's in many ways, a very wise movement, wise approach. But the Tea Party movement was by and large an intra-party movement within the on the conservative side of the spectrum, and so it's a different thing to be trying to affect somebody a different party's
from outside
politics.
Yeah. Let's hear from Sam. Sam is with us in Highland, Utah. Sam, welcome.
Hi, thanks.
Sure.
I just wanted to ask about some of the negative activism. I don't really understand it. I never voted for Obama, but I accepted him as my president, and I fought tooth and nail against Donald Trump, but he's the president now, and I totally understand fighting against his policies and doing everything we can to implement the checks and balances, and I'm glad that those are working, but I don't understand being negative against the person or against the party. I can't align with either the Democratic or the Republican parties because there's so much mudslinging and negativity in both parties.
Something I read actually this week said by Charlie Luke, member of the Salt Lake City Council, and a Democrat. He told the Salt Lake Tribune that the incivility at the Chaffetz town hall meeting was not productive. He was quoted as saying Chaffetz had ensured his reelection for as long as he chooses to run, because that behavior, and he was referring to the booing and the interrupting him, will embolden his majority Republican district. We need to resist, he said, but let's be smart in the way we do it. I want to hear from both of you.
Can I jump in on that?
Yeah, please, yes.
Yeah, I think that is absolutely something to be careful about for those that are involved in this movement. So there's a scholar named Charles Tilly who talks a lot about social movements, and the very first thing that he talks about is that it's important for the social movement to be perceived as worthy And so, you know, symbolism and behavior that is seen as worthy and acceptable is an important thing. This is part of why nonviolence is so essential in social movements. But it's very challenging, you know, when I think it gets back to this idea of expressive politics versus strategic politics. And it's very tempting to want to use this outlet to simply be expressive and get your emotions out. I think it's a whole nother matter, and frankly, in the long run, a much more important matter to be thinking about this strategically. And, you know, who is your target audience? Who are you trying to convince to join you? Who are you trying to motivate to behave differently? And how can you behave in a way that furthers that that agenda rather than simply expressing how you feel about something?
What do you think?
Well, I, in agreement with Professor Preece about the link with electoral politics, and so I'd like to shift this a little bit away from the Jason Chaffetz event and to the future of the Democratic Party.
Who's in the midst of trying to pick its leaders this coming weekend?
Yeah, this weekend the DNC is choosing its new leadership, and it'll be more than symbolic whether a mainstream establishment quote-unquote candidate or someone who's more aligned with movement politics and the Bernie Sanders campaign comes out as the DNC chair. It matters a ton because these groups who are opposing Trump have to link with an electoral party that can get seats. This is what the Tea Party did, and this is why individual modeling themselves on the Tea Party is a little strange to me as well, because I understood, my understanding of the Tea Party was that they took over the Republican Party at the nominating stage and got people in on the ballot who were going to sign the pledge and, you know, not, you know, absolutely no compromise, you know, hold the hard line, and they took over Congress. Democratic Party is a massively powerful vehicle for political ideas. Any political party that has such a big slice of the pie is. And these protests will need to link because this is the only form of power that's going to cash out. I don't think we're seeing a new civil rights movement, for example, because the civil rights movement had all of these legal targets, this legal equality and equal protection under the law and desegregation of schools and public facilities, and they had the ethical high ground of nonviolence. We're in a different stage now. These are teed off progressives who don't feel like they have a voice, and they need the Democratic Party to have a real voice.
I think there are similar questions in the Republican Party, and especially I'm thinking especially in Utah, where Donald Trump did not have a whole lot of support in Utah. And so while many Republicans in the state are willing to you know, recognize him as their president and try and give the benefit of the doubt, that support may be, I'm not sure it's even wide, but it's certainly not deep. And so I think it's an interesting question what's going to happen within the Republican Party in Utah, and especially whether some of our representatives and legislators and people like that who have been supportive of Trump are going to see primary challengers. I think that's a very important question.
From the left within the Republican
Party?
Within
the Republican Party, I don't know that it's I wouldn't categorize it as a right-left question. As I talk to conservatives, many are concerned it's not about policy, right? From a policy perspective, people like Representative Chaffetz represent their district quite well. But from it's a different dimension, which is sort of a commitment to Constitution and democratic norms and competence and things like that. So it's not about sort of left right, moderate or extreme conservatives. It's about, you know, this sort of Evan McMullen kind of, you know, what kind of Democratic Republic do we want to be a part of? I think that's the really interesting dimension within the Republican Party right now.
All right, I need to jump to a break. I'm really nervous I'm going to lose Mike and Sandy. So, Mike, stay with us. I want to get to your phone call just as soon as we do get back. Let me read a quick couple before we go to that break from David, who writes, "On Inauguration Day, I realized the country had entered a period of combat. It might be combat with words, but it's combat nonetheless. There are different rules for combat. I'm no longer looking for converts to my side. I'm looking for allies." David writes, "I'm losing friends and family members right and left who are not my allies in this important fight for our nation's survival." And this from Jay, who writes on Twitter, "What if civility is ultimately just a way to make people comfortable when they should be uncomfortable? What if civility is used to silence or to set the only acceptable terms for speech?" We'll take a really quick break and come back for some final thoughts in just a moment. This is Radio West on KUER. This is Radio West. I'm Doug Fabrizio. Today in the program, we have been talking about how people are getting involved politically in the wake of the election in November, how you're getting involved, how you're making yourself heard, what type of engagement you think is going to make a difference. We're going to move to that idea of making a difference here in a moment. I want to hear from Mike, though, who's joining us from Sandy. Mike, welcome to the program.
Hi, Doug. Thank you very much.
Sure.
So I wanted to bring a little different kind of balance to what I've been listening to this last hour. I spent 22 years as a precinct chair. I came from the East Coast, and I have perceived something that I think is inappropriate in one of your guest statements, and I hear it often being said, that they are representing the vast majority of the American citizens in fighting this result. Now, I'm not a person who's going to say any of us loved either of the candidates we had, but she's absolutely flatly wrong when she says that. The bicoastal liberal elitist agenda has been moving forward for decades in incremental fashion. What we saw, I believe, was a rising up of the conservatives who tend to hold back until they get really, really angry. And that's what we saw. And I think one of the best proofs of that is that when we talk about local politics across this nation from coast to coast, you see Republicans and conservatives and independents, not elitist liberals holding, and I grew up in that New York environment, not elitist liberals who are holding their local and electing their local leaders, who are active in their local communities. So I think it is unfair of the elite liberals to be saying that this is a real manifestation of what America believes. It is flat out not true.
Jessica Priest, you start with that. Do you want to? What are you hearing there with Mike? And Mike,
well,
really glad you called.
Yeah, I mean, there are wide variety of political positions in this country, and I think it's really important to remember that. Not only do we have two political parties with various views and ideologies, but within each political party, there are strong factions that disagree with each other. I mean, our political parties in a two-party system are alliances of people that agree enough with each other to work together, but also disagree on a variety of different things. And so, you know, I think that it's true that it's not, there are lots of people in this country who are perfectly fine with President Trump and many of the things that he's pursuing. But he represents one faction within the Republican Party, and there factions within the Republican Party.
Sorry, but let me just ask, but what you don't seem to be hearing, maybe I'm wrong, is an effort to reach out. I get the anguish. I get the emotion. Has there been enough of an effort to reach out to those disaffected former Democrats who are in the Rust Belt states, people who used to be Dems, but now because they were responding, I think, to Mike's characterization, at least of some portion of the Democratic Party, liberal elitists, they went for Trump. I mean, are you hearing any attempts at reaching out to that faction, or should they, or is that just a faction?
within the Republican Party.
Yeah.
I mean, I think we need to be paying attention. People are suffering in the Rust Belt and in other places. And that's a constituency that needs attention. There are lots of constituencies that need attention in this country, and that is an important one, and that happened to be one that was especially important for this election. And so, you know, the parties ignore folks like that at their own peril. So, you know, sure, we need to pay attention to folks who are suffering in the Rust Belt and other working class folks. And that is something that we need to pay a lot of attention to. Both parties should be paying attention to that group.
Luke, what do you think?
President Trump's electoral strategy is a unique one. And it's one where he is, he got elected with a sizable minority, and that he wants to keep that base together. I just see him, he's posturing for the next election, keeping the same strategy in mind.
Final question. Does this make a difference? These town hall meetings, these really explosive expressions of engagement, I mean, what difference does it make, I guess, is the question. Luke Garrett, you first.
Well, it makes difference in the way that we've already acknowledged, which is the expressive side, the solidaristic side. When you are in a rally with like-minded people, your spirit lifts, and that's the magic of collective action. That matters to people for sure, because they want to be agents in a democracy. As far as making real change, no, there won't be any real change. Representative Chaffetz will not be accountable to those protesters. President Trump will not be accountable to the protesters. Unfortunately, our system only has very few ways of making change, and if it's not through elected bodies, legislatures, it ain't going to happen.
Jessica Priest, final word.
I think it can change the agenda, the issues that people are having to respond to. So in that way, I think it can be valuable. But ultimately, electoral politics are what matters, and legislative politics. So if people are interested in making a difference, it needs to be channeled at some point also to elections.
That's Jessica Priest, teaches political science at Brigham Young University, joined us from the studios of KBYU. Professor, thank you for your time.
Mm-hmm.
And Luke Garrett teaches political science here at the University of Utah. Thanks for coming in.
Thanks, Doug.
Thank you all for your comments, your calls, your emails. You can continue the conversation. Go to radiowest.org to do that. Radio West is a production of KUER News, the show directed today by Tim Slover. Our thanks to our intern, David Boyle. The program is produced by Benjamin Bombard and Elaine Clark. I'm Doug Fabrizio.